Hey, Kev, let's follow this trail over here. This looks like there might be something waiting down there.
All right. Hey, wait a minute. Do you hear that?
Yeah, I thought it was just me. What the heck is that?
I don't know what that is. Whoa, do you smell that, too?
That's unbelievable. Hey, look.
What the?
Hey, look, those branches are moving over there.
What the heck is that?
Holy cow, is that what I think it is? Look at that thing.
Oh my god.
It's a freaking Sasquatch.
Welcome to the Bigfoot Terror in the Woods Sightings and Encounters podcast. I am your host, W.J. Sheehan, author of the series of books, Bigfoot Terror in the Woods, Sightings and Encounters. 11 volumes available in paperback, ebook, and Kindle. 10 of them are currently available in audio format at Amazon, iTunes, and Audible. And as I told you the last time around, folks, I'm working on volume 11. Everything takes time, and 12 is in the hands of my book lady. And if you didn't tune in the last time, I'm currently segregating or dividing all of my books into regions so that if you have an interest in the Pacific Northwest, Alaska, Washington, Oregon, or the Northeast or the Southeast, I'm creating 7 volumes that will be in paperback and audio format by the time this whole thing is done. And folks, it's going to take some time, believe you me when I tell you. And by the way, I'm running solo again today. If you're new to this podcast, generally my brother KJ and I do the show, but he is caught up in a lot of travel. I'm not sure when this podcast will be released. He and I will be doing one together on Saturday morning, and I'm not sure when that one will go up. But we do our best to keep rolling, folks. So bear with us. Hope you're enjoying what we do. And as the smoke clears, we'll be together intermittently and back together probably permanently until this happens again. So generally in the beginning of the show, my brother does a little ditty called Cryptids in the News and Other Oddities. And we're usually talking about something strange, be it a creature, UFO, hauntings. But today, since Kevin is not here and I got my hands cut out for me working on everything else I'm doing with Bigfoot, my friend and a friend of the podcast, Philip from Kentucky. By the way, Phil, love you, bro. I know you're listening. And we were talking, and Philip has a background in a lot of different things, but he's also studied some law. And he came out with some crazy laws. And I asked him, send me over a few of these laws. I think some of the listeners, before we get into Bigfoot, will get as much of a kick out of them as I did when we were talking about them. Now, these are laws that are on the books in different states, and there's more of them than we have here. I only have 4. And it makes you wonder, like, who's driving the bus? Who is driving the damn bus that we still have these types of things on the books? Listen to this. In Ohio, it is illegal to fish for whales on Sunday. Now, first of all, there are no whales in Ohio. And even if you go to the Great Lakes, they're fresh water. There's no whales in there either. So what I ask you is the purpose of creating a law, and what type of people sat down in a forum of minds and said yay to the approval of the law that it is illegal to fish for whales on Sunday in Ohio. Arizona, Believe it or not, folks, it is illegal to let your donkey sleep in the bathtub. So if you're out there in Arizona, rule out letting your pet donkey come into your tub and relax and soak for a while, because you can't do it. You'll be under arrest. You can't even get a donkey in a bathtub. Who's talking? Who's making these laws? In Kentucky, if you take a note, an oath rather, not a note, if you take an oath to become a notary in the state, part of the oath is a question. And the question is asking you, have you ever participated in a duel? Be it with pistols, swords, shanks, bats, whatever. Have you ever participated in a duel, sir or ma'am? Answer the question, please. And last, in Indiana. Indiana, my friends, you're lucky to live there. You may not be aware, and I caution you, it is, in fact, illegal to carry your ice cream cone in your back pocket. So stop what you're doing. Pull the vanilla and vanilla cone with chocolate syrup and sprinkles out of your pocket and dispose of it immediately. You are in dire trouble. Anyways, I don't know. It's crazy, isn't it? And Philip and I are talking. Philip's under the impression that the reason these things stay under books is because these jokers don't want to waste time or get up in front of their fellow congressmen, legislatures, senators, and ask them to remove this law or these laws from the book state by state. You would think you could just take some white out or a very big eraser and just expunge these things from the public record. I mean, it's unbelievable. What does this have to do with Bigfoot? Absolutely nothing. I thought it was funny, and I wanted to share it with you. Now, the first thing I'm pulling out of the hat here is something I've been sitting on for a long time. But because it's so short, it's hard to work things into the podcast. We're working in time restraints or constraints. And sometimes I'm looking for a little more, a little less, and you can't really time it that way. The reports are what the reports are. But this little ditty, I want to share it with you. And we'll just kick it around for a minute or two, and you can write back to me at BigfootTerrorInTheWoods.com, hit the contact link, tell me what you think about it, and I'll tell you what I think about it. So this following piece of a letter, this is what we're talking about, a piece of a letter. When I say letter, not like A, B, C, D, but a note or some type of written manuscript. This is a piece of a page, okay? To some, this thing may seem insignificant, but to me, it was so profound and telling that I had to share it with you tonight. It was sent to me in a text message by a Mrs. Valerie Lucas, whose home burnt to the ground in those California wildfires we had a while back. And as you're about to hear, in my opinion, this segment says so little, and yet so much. So listen to this. As we came over the rise, there was a mist laying heavily in the depression that was before us. I'm going to step back for a second, folks, because I want you to understand this segment that I'm reading here is the letter or the piece of the letter that was found. Okay, so this isn't the woman Her name is Valerie Lucas. She came upon this segment of the letter, and this is how it reads, okay? So I didn't mean to stumble you there, but I want you to understand what's going on here. As we came over the rise, the mist was laying heavily in the depression that was before us. 100 beams of sunlight were streaming through the canopy, creating a somewhat kaleidoscopic effect to our eyes. And there, standing in the midst of this haze, bathed in the foggy rays of the sun, was the silhouette of the creature, Bigfoot. In what seemed like an instant, its shoulder turned, and with what appeared to be a singular step, it was gone, never to be seen again by our eyes. David wanted to follow, but I said, and then the rest is a blank. That's it. The rest was torn up or burnt up. Now, this was all that was left of a letter, manuscript. I have no idea what it was, but it was sent to her late husband from her brother about his hunting trip on Vancouver Island. It was picked up being a small piece of yellow legal pad from the ashes of the house. Just incredible. So she claims no knowledge of this letter. And yet going back to revisit the destroyed house, you can imagine, folks, how much debris and paper and crap was around, not only in her burnt out house, but other areas, blowing around all of this garbage, burnt cars. And she comes across this chunk of a letter that she believes was from her husband's brother about a hunting trip he took on Vancouver Island. Incredible, isn't it? So was this nonsense? If it was from his brother to him, is he writing him or sending him a copy of his Bigfoot book? Or so? You know, it doesn't make sense to me. And any way you look at it, the decision is yours as to what exactly you think this segment is. Now, let me move on. So that was pretty cool, though, you'll have to admit. Now, this account came to me by a fellow named Lewis Hertz. Lives in Washington. And this is what Lewis had to say. It was in 1987 that my friend and hunting partner Elvin and I had gone ashore on Vancouver Island hunting for Roosevelt elk. So here we have a piece of a letter coming from his hunting trip to Vancouver Island, and here we have a couple of guys hunting for Roosevelt elk on Vancouver Island. It was on our second day in, hiking north of Cachalot and making our way through the timber on a heading which would bring us to the shore, that the roaring began. At the time, we both looked at each other and said it was grizzlies. I say grizzlies because they were two very distinct roars which we were hearing, one being much deeper than the other. But what exactly was going on, we had no idea. We knew it was not very close, and we decided to step up the pace, heading in the direction of what we were hearing. Possibly a big mistake, my friends. Until perhaps we could see the source without endangering ourselves in the process. The roaring had been going on for almost 10 minutes, and it was definitely getting louder. A sure indication that we were closing in on the source, so we slowed our pace. The visibility was not good in here, and we knew there were many bears in the area as well. We came up to a rise in the woods, and as we reached its precipice, we looked down over a timbered hillside which met the water below. There was another smaller island in view, perhaps 1,000 yards across this body of water. It was then, as this violent roaring continued, that we saw a flash of dark brown pass between some trees below us, which was followed by what appeared to be a dark gray figure, and the same brown flash coming back the other way across this break in the trees. The growling and shrieking roars were so intense that they almost sounded as if they were screams of pain. The two of us believed we were watching two grizzlies fighting with each other, one being older and somewhat gray, and the other being dark brown. From our position, we could see the edge of the shore and not much else, so we edged in a little bit closer. Danger, danger! This fight had been going on for the better part of 20 minutes. And didn't sound like it was letting up at all. We stopped in a spot where there was more visibility in the direction of the struggle, but we still couldn't see anything. It was then that we heard what sounded like a deep shriek, which was followed by a loud splash like a tree falling in the water. Moments later, we saw what appeared to be the darker brown animal swimming in the water, heading towards this small island, apparently escaping from the fight defeated. All we could see was the head above the water and the wake created by its swimming. As this beast was now about 50 yards offshore, we heard a loud howling roar, which was followed by a large piece of tree limb hitting the water behind the swimming creature. And then all went quiet. We sat there watching this animal swim for about 15 minutes, being absolutely mesmerized by what had transpired. Again, all we could see was a dark head above the water and nothing more of its body. It was at about the 15-minute mark, which Elvin said to me, "I wonder what happened to the gray one." It's funny, but I was thinking the very same thing as he said it. Suddenly, we heard what I will describe as a loud half kind of cough and half grunt. It sounded like a monster clearing its throat. That's the only way I could describe it. This was followed by a lot of sounds of crashing and breaking of branches. Whatever was making the noise was not trying to keep quiet, and it was now heading up the slope in our direction. Elvin and I, fearing the worst, that this pissed-off gray bear was now heading towards us, hunkered down behind two large trees with our rifles pointed towards the incoming bear, or so we thought. Only 2 minutes or so later, down and off to our left-hand side, we saw a mammoth-sized gray and white Sasquatch passing through the trees and moving south of our position. All I can say is thank God it didn't see us. My entire body began to shake and quiver, and Elvin's eyes were as big as pancakes. This thing was walking through the trees at a rapid pace and shoving everything and anything out of its way as it did so, grunting and huffing as it walked. In about 30 seconds, it was all over, and we sat there stunned, looking in the direction it had walked. We had forgotten all about the swimmer, and as we turned our heads, it was no longer visible in the water. Either it had swum out of view or had made its way all the way to the island, which in and of itself was a magnificent feat of strength and endurance. This gray Sasquatch had to have been 9 feet tall and perhaps 2 feet deep on its side profile. The head appeared to be 2 feet tall in and of itself and was shoved down within the shoulders. I saw its brow was hanging over the front of its face, which made it appear rather grotesque, Its skin was dark and weather-beaten, looking as though it was cracked and dry, like worn-out, sun-beaten leather. Very, very descriptive. We sat for almost an hour, knowing that we had to head back in the direction which this monster had just traveled, and we weren't looking forward to it. Over the next 2 days, nothing further had been seen or heard. And believe me when I tell you, that was enough for a lifetime. Incredible, huh? Just incredible. And these guys, it reminded me of the account I called The Fight that was out of Alberta, Canada, where these guys were fishing on the lake in three different aluminum boats. And they start hearing roaring coming, first in one direction and then in another. And the roars were closing in. And this clash of two Bigfoots, two Bigfoot took place in front of them on the narrow shoreline of this lake. Slapping, biting, grappling. I remember him commenting that they never hit each other with a closed fist. And here these guys apparently think they're seeing two grizzly bears of different colorations having it out on the shoreline, with one apparently diving in the water to swim away, and the other, which they believe was what they saw, came up and bypassed their position, avoiding them entirely. I can't think that that Bigfoot coming up didn't know they were there. He probably was just ticked off, walking away like, you know, screw this. And he didn't want nothing to do with them or wasn't going to stop to bother them or do anything with them either. Very interesting, huh? Now, here is the other thing. How many people say when they sight a Bigfoot that it looks like the head is part of the shoulders? This is this tremendous musculature they have coming from the upper back shoulder region, connecting up to the back of the head. I was just reviewing some accounts in my assembly of the Pacific Northwest and the Northeast versions of this these books that I'm putting together. And there was a number of people in there who said the same thing. When it turned its head like a turret on a tank. When it turned, its whole body turned with it so it could look. Like, there's no neck. It's just like one contiguous package of muscle, flesh, and bone. Just incredible, man. So when you wonder where the power comes from, first of all, it's a God-given thing. But second of all, when you see the structure on these things, and whatever the fibers and whatnot their muscles are made out of, these are some strong, strong buggers, I guarantee. Now, this other account, let me make sure I've got it right here. Pardon me while I take a sip of my coffee, would you? When you're alone, there's nobody to take up the slack. All right. Let me see what I got here. Oh, here we go. So here you have it. I'm going to ask you a question before I read this. How would you react, or how would you like to be awakened from your sleep by a Sasquatch pulling on your sleeping bag? Think about that for a minute. Can you imagine laying down in a pup tent, mountain tent, or maybe out under the dark, starry-lit sky and have something starting to drag your sleeping bag? You wake up, you don't know what it is. You're thinking, I'm dead. And this account was brought to my attention by Layla Rodriguez and her friend Miriam, both of whom are residents of the state of Oregon. Now, allow me to read to you what Layla had to share. Now, this account was taken a while ago, so this wasn't 5 months from today. It was probably, I'm not sure, several years ago. This encounter happened only 5 months ago, Bill, as my friend Miriam and I began our hike on Triangulation Peak and Boca Cave Trail. We arrived at the site at 9:30 in the morning and approached what is a little box where you must fill out a piece of paper, known as the Northwest Forest Pass. Interesting. And keep a copy for yourself. Failure to fill this out can render you on the receiving end of a fine, and we were actually met by a Forestry Service person on our hike out who asked if we had it. Isn't that nice? Forestry Northwest Forest Pass. Looking back, what actually had ended in sheer terror actually began early on in the hike. The two of us were making our way up the trail and had stopped for a breather, taking in the view of Mount Hood, Three Finger Jack, South Sista, and of course, Mount Jefferson. The view on this day was spectacular, in that all of the mountain peaks were covered by a cloud layer, which was concealing the top section of each of the mountains. It was as we were taking in this view, looking out over a sea of tall pines, that Miriam said to me, "What's that in the trees over there?" She had pointed in a certain direction, and as I looked, the only thing that I saw was a branch swaying as she said, "Oh, shoot, it just went back in the trees." I asked her what she had seen. She responded that she wasn't sure, adding that it looked like the head of a black bear. As we continued on, we were approached by a young woman who was coming down from the top, and she asked us for our pass, which we gave her. She commended us on being well-geared, including our walking poles, and saying that they'd come in handy descending to the Boca Cave once we reached the top. Now having reached the top, we were making our way down to the cave. There is a primitive campsite at the top where no campfires are allowed, and you must descend down and to the left through a burned-out section of forest, where the trees appear orange and black, the black being the remaining pieces of bark, and the exposed trunks were orange from the effects of the flames. As we descended through these burnt trees, our field of vision was broken up by thousands of charred orange and black trees. I can't imagine this landscape. The cloud cover by then had lifted, and we were looking at one of the mountains, when both of us this time saw a large, black, two-legged, emphasis on the two legs, my friends, two-legged feature move quickly in and out of view at about 200 yards. It had occurred so quickly that we had no time to focus on and identify what we were looking at. Both of us were in agreement that it looked like a hunter running to get in a better position, or something of the sort. And to be honest with you, at the time, it really didn't raise a red flag to either of us. In other words, we weren't afraid in any way. Having made our way down from this campsite and through the burnt-out forest, we entered Boca Cave, which is enormous. Standing in the back of it, within the confines of the cave, we looked out through the opening, where Mount Jefferson is perfectly framed by the mouth, or the eye, as it is known, of the cave. We proceeded then to head back up to the peak to watch the sunset, with our plan being to crash for the night under the stars in our mummy bags. As evening turned to darkness, we were enveloped by a sea of stars, and the moon was only 2 days from being full. The entire peak and surrounding forests, as well as the distant mountains, were now blanketed with an eerie kind of glow. It was almost 2:30 in the morning when we had finally crashed. Miriam was already snoring 5 minutes after laying down, while I was still wide awake in my bag, when I heard something like a snort. I thought it reminded me of an elk, and although it freaked me out a little, soon afterward, I had fallen asleep as well. I know it was 4:45, having looked at my watch after the event, that I was awakened by a noise. What it was, I can't tell you, but something made me open my eyes. Quite literally 2 seconds after opening my eyes, Miriam let out a blood-curdling scream. And as I turned my head, she was shouting, oh my God, help me! A Sasquatch was lifting up the bottom end of her sleeping bag with her in it. She was trying frantically to escape from her bag while her legs were fully lifted into the air. And I was screaming at this demon from hell while getting out of my own bag. There were rocks laying all around the area, and I began chucking them as fast as I could at this monster as it growled and dropped her. I could see its face as it snarled in the moonlight and extended its arms towards me as if to say, "You're next." It then looked down at Miriam, who's now halfway out of her bag, turned away, and moved quickly down the slope. Miriam was trembling and crying as we now embraced and I tried to calm her down. She was whimpering, saying that it was trying to take her. We stayed awake the rest of the night until the sun rose on the horizon before making our way down. I saw this thing front on in the moonlight at only 10 feet. It had an evil grin which exposed massive yellowed teeth, two of which were fangs. I could see its tongue, which was blackened and pink, similar to that seen in some dogs' mouths, and it stunk like you cannot even imagine. An extremely foul odor that words can't describe, at least my words anyway. The Sasquatch was about 9 feet tall and wider than you could possibly imagine. It had Miriam's legs lifted up to its waist, which rendered her completely inverted as I began to hurl the rocks at it. When it turned to leave, it leaped as if it had springs in its legs, taking what appeared to be long, bouncing strides, and it was gone in a matter of seconds, covering a lot of ground in the process. Having reached the bottom, the same forestry woman from the day before met up with us and started saying, "You know, something told me to come back and check on you ladies." Well, when we started to tell her what had happened, she was beside herself and began telling us of stories she had heard through the years from many people in the same area who had seen these things. We told her to smell Miriam's sleeping bag. And when she did, she withdrew her nose like she had just stuck it into a bag of crap. That was the spot where the Sasquatch had been handling it. What do you think, folks? this sheds a whole new light on being a light sleeper, does it not? Especially when a 1,000-pound monster is picking you up in the air in the middle of a good night's sleep. Do be careful out there, my friends. Very, very careful. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. True? I don't know. Judge for yourself. It's not the first time I had a guide in Montana or Wyoming, probably 3-4 years ago, gave me a very detailed synopsis of multiple encounters they had with a Bigfoot while out on like what was supposed to be a week-long horse trip up in the Rockies. And one of the guys was dragged away, and he was blaming the other guys for goofing on him, and nobody had. And it became well-known later on into the pack trip who exactly was responsible for it, and it was, in fact, Bigfoot. So there you have it. Believe it or not, the onus is on you, my friends. Now, as is customary, I want to dig into, put the letter opener into a couple of electronic mail envelopes and see, it's just some of the things that some of you, our listeners, are saying. And by the way, folks, if you've seen something, say something. Perhaps you just want to say something. Contact us at BigfootTerrorInTheWoods.com. Hit the contact button. If you've had an account, saw some extraordinary evidence, want to get something off your shoulders, contact me. We'll exchange numbers. We'll have a little chat. I do it all the time. I talk to people all the time. So don't be shy. If you just want to write in just to say hello, or like the guy whose email I just read a little while ago says, who are you to be an authority? You should be ashamed of yourself. Well, my friend, you're probably listening to this show again today, and I would advise you to tune out. Now, this letter or message came from a woman named Patty. Of course, you know we don't use last names here. She says to us, hi, from the Smoky Mountains, Tennessee. Just wanted to touch base with you both, WJ and KJ, letting you know we're out here listening to you. Haven't seen a Bigfoot, but sure am looking. Most I've had happen is an odd smell when we were hiking. Well, let me say this. Maybe you should look for an outhouse if you keep smelling an odd smell. But we love your show. Myself and my husband, Matthew. Keep up the good job. We love you guys. And Patty, excellent. I love it. And I'm glad you love the show. We like doing it. And it's because people like you that we keep on keeping on. And by the way, folks, you know, I got all these books and audiobooks out there. This is a tremendous undertaking. I spent 3 hours the other night putting together a table of contents on the Pacific Northwest book that I'm working on. 3 hours. And I won't explain to you what that involved, but that was just that. So show a little support. You know, it's nice to know I'm not doing this for nothing. And, you know, the only barometer I have for what I do is if people enjoy it enough to grab one for themselves. The second electronic envelope comes from a fellow named Brad. His subject? Beyond Skinwalker Ranch. Greetings, KJ and WJ from Indiana. KJ, I'm sitting in proxy for KJ, so I will be KJ. KJ, after hearing your latest story pertaining to Gordon Gordo Cooper and the UFO sightings, it made me think to write in and ask you both if you've happened to catch the show Beyond Skinwalker Ranch. I just happened to come across it on Hulu, and I got hooked. And I'm hoping for a second season. As always, keep up the great work. And I hope when I visit Washington State in a month for a hiking trek, I can get a selfie with Bigfoot. And I hope, Brad, that you are kidding. Because I am always saying, do not, and may I repeat, do not seek out close contact with the hairy man. If you're lucky, you will live to regret it. Relative to Beyond Skinwalker, Kevin and I have been watching this show from the get-go. I think it's going to be in its third season if they launch it. I have regular television, so I pick it up, and I have it on DVR to record whenever it starts, and there they are. And, of course, if you're unfamiliar, it originally started as the search for Skinwalker Ranch, and they still do that. That's in the Uinta Basin. And what they decided to do, at least according to the promotion of the show, is to have another team of, quote, experts go out in other areas regionally. They do a lot of investigating around the Uinta North, not too far away, you know, and see if they can reproduce any of the evidence being found at Skinwalker in these other areas. And they are able to reproduce it and are, in fact, uncovering other strange things in the process. So I'd encourage you to watch it. Folks, it's well worth seeing. Beyond Skinwalker Ranch, very cool. Some science involved in there. I'm sure a little drama, as they all do. But all in all, I know Kevin and myself, we consider it to be must-see television. And by the way, Kevin's piece on Gordo Cooper and the UFO sightings, I had never really delved into that. And that's why you are such an important part of what we do. A lot of the things that KJ covers in Cryptids in the News and Other Oddities come in from you guys saying, hey, check this out, guys. This might be really cool for Cryptids in the News and Other Oddities. And we're just uncovering things. We're just throwing stuff out there for ourselves and for you to see what everybody thinks about it. That's all this is about. It's about sharing, you know. I remember Art Bell. I think I said this a few weeks ago, so don't let me bore you. Art Bell had a woman call her on the phone one night. And he said to the woman, you know, ma'am, not everything you hear on here is true. So, you know, he's interviewing a lot of people and they're slinging a lot of snot around. And it's for entertainment. You know, you believe it, you don't. No skin off of anybody's nose, right? And my last email comes from a fellow named Woolman. His subject, wildlife. I don't think he's talking about going out to the pub. I started listening to your podcast a year or so ago. I was desperate. That was his first problem. He was desperate. I was desperate for relief from the news of the day and needed something different to listen to at work. I found your podcast, have become a regular listener, and have read all your books, except the last one, which is on my list. I feel like I got in on the ground floor of the Bigfoot phenomena, much like getting interested in UFOs 40 years ago. Some of the info in your books reminded me of finding a teepee-shaped wood structure in the woods many years ago. Isn't that interesting? While the chance of it being a Bigfoot construction in northern New Jersey is slim, excuse me, to none the memory of this very skeletal, out-of-place structure still remains. He must have meant to say, to me, the memory. It says to none. To me, the memory of this very skeletal, out-of-place structure still remains. We don't have a Bigfoot around my present location, or so you think, William. We do have coyotes, and in the winter they form packs capable of taking down deer. The sound of a pack of coyotes chasing down and killing a deer in the wee hours of the morning, in close proximity, is downright horrifying and will get the adrenaline flowing quickly after a dead sleep. The idea of crossing paths with one of these packs late at night while unarmed reminds me of just how fragile life can be. Yes, life can be fragile, William, especially when you go in the woods unprepared in New Jersey, thinking that the hairy man doesn't live in your neighborhood. You are mistaken. I just finished putting a couple of accounts in the Northeast version of this conglomeration of stories. And according to these individuals, Bigfoot is alive and well in parts of New Jersey. So you may want to reconsider your stance on such things. It's amazing, isn't it? All the things going on out there. People see them. People get mad at me for talking about the things I say. People love hearing the things I say. People hate them. You know, I mean, come on. And that's going to rub it for this night, folks. That's the rub for the Bigfoot Terror in the Woods podcast. Love talking to you. Love doing what I do. Love that you're out there listening. And remember, if you should find yourself walking in the woods in New Jersey, Tennessee, in the Appalachian Mountains, you best remember one thing, my friends. Always carry more gun than you think you're going to need. Sleep tight.